Greetings from Long Island, where every highway is a sunrise. It's time for Dave's Gone By, an hour of comedy, talk, and music brought to you by Total Theater, with your host, Dave Lefkowitz. You've never heard anything like it, so sit back, relax, squeal if you must. Here's the host of Dave's Gone By, Dave!
Tropical hot dog night!
Well, cough, cough, there goes the neighborhood. Welcome, everybody, to the 220th episode of Dave's Gone By on this very lovely May 13th, 2007, Mother's Day. We are flying the mothership all the way until midnight tonight. And if my voice sounds a little raggedy, a little different than it usually does, well, there's, if you were listening last week, you know the excuse for that. 2 weeks ago, went on a camping trip for the first time in my life, and assumedly and perhaps hopefully for the very last time in my life, I went on a camping trip down to North Carolina to see a bluegrass festival called Merlefest, and nothing so terrible about that. They had some very fine musicians, if you're into bluegrass and that kind of thing. They had people like Elvis Costello, who, you know, is the first person I think of when I think of bluegrass, as well as folks like Alison Krauss and Earl Scruggs and, of course, Doc Watson, because the whole festival was named after his son, Merle, who was, of all things, killed when he was riding a tractor and it flipped over on him and turned him into Merle Slaw. And that ended up becoming sort of a benefit concert, and that rolled into this thing that they do every year that's huge now, with all these different concert stages outdoors and these vendors, and it's really quite nice and lovely. And if you're into, pardon me, the whole camping scene, kind of a neat thing. But if, A, you've never camped before, B, you're not really into the whole great outdoors thing to begin with, especially having to live in it, and C, one day into the camping trip, you get the head cold from hell, well, you know just what kind of weekend it's going to be. So I get this miserable, nasty head cold, and I'm dosing it. I'm taking, like, Loratidin, which doesn't work. It's like you get this sort of generic brand of Claritin called Loratidin, and it has the antihistamine in it, which is fine if you have hives, but not an actual decongestant. Well, go figure. So it isn't until 2 days later that I start to actually drain away, and the cold, you know how the colds move, they start just above your eyebrows when you've got it full flush, and then down, you know, your eyes clear up a little bit, and then it's into your sinuses, and then down your sinuses to your mouth, and then it lodges in your throat, and a little bit in your chest, hopefully not too deep in your chest, or then you've got a little bit of new and old pneumonia. Well, I was getting over the cold, I was feeling pretty better last week with a bit of a cough, but certainly on the road to recovery. And then go figure, 2 nights ago, I just got a case of the whooping cough or whatever it is, and it just stuck down there in my chest, and all the tea and honey in the world and all the cold ginger ale is just, you know, my wife's playing nursemaid and doing whatever she can. But especially after the sun goes down, it's like I reach back into the lungs and into the throat and into the thorax, wherever the thorax happens to be. It's like a Dr. Seuss character, beware the thorax. No, it's a Lorax, I know. See, even my jokes are under the weather tonight. So anyway, forgive me if I sound a little different or if I go into these really relentless and sickening coughing jags. There's nothing I can help. I hope you don't mind them. And we have so much to do tonight, and so much of interest to do on tonight's program, that I want to get right to it. First of all, gotta thank all the sponsors of this program who make it possible. So thank you so much to Hewlett Minuteman Press, the Copy Kings of Broadway, 1315 Broadway in Hewlett, right next to that new Lohman's shoe store. Hewlett Minuteman Press, 10% off for Dave's Gone By listeners for all your copying, printing, and brochure needs. Performing Arts Insider, the theater bible of Broadway. You know, the Broadway season just ended a day or so ago, the last show of the season opened. Did you hear that little burp I did? Right? And that was completely spontaneous. Jeff Goodman, who is my sometimes co-host on this program, he's not here yet, probably be showing up in a little bit, but he can burp on cue. I don't know how he does it, but he has this reflex, this thing where he can take in air and belch, just like that. Me, I can't burp or break wind without having to do it for real. So that was a real teeny little burp, and I'm very proud of that. Anywho, what was I saying? Oh yeah, Performing Arts Insider, Theater Magazine, the theater season, Broadway season, just ended with 110 in the Shade, the Roundabout production of a really, really nice musical. And that's it. The new season starts, like, tomorrow. And it already rolls into stuff. What it really means is all the shows had to have opened in order to be eligible for this year's Tony Awards, because the voters have to see them all and then make their selections. So just because the season's over doesn't mean all these shows are going away. And you've got the Tony Awards coming up on June 10th. And I mentioned last week that for the third straight year, I will be hosting the WGBB Tony Awards special. And this one's going to be on a Monday night. We got prime time. It's going to be Monday, June 4th from 7 to 10 p.m. Monday, June 4th. Mark your calendars. Get your computers on. Get your radios on. It's going to be fun. What we always do is we talk to a bunch of critics, because those are most of the people that I know, and we ask them what they think of all the shows that open and what the odds are of different shows winning. We also try and get a couple of nominees to come on and then talk to us. It's usually a lot of fun, and we play a lot of show tunes, which, straight or gay, occasionally they're kind of fun to hear. So, ladies and gentlemen, the WGBB 3rd Annual Tony Awards Special happening on Monday, not this coming Monday, but Monday, June 4th, just before the Tonys that coming weekend, hosted by me. And anyway, if you want to be ready for that, if you want to know what all the shows are, who's in them, when they're opening, when they're changing casts, what's coming in the next season, you got to get yourself Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine. And also, Fancy Schmancy Balloons. This is the time for graduations, time for weddings, wonderful time for all sorts of big parties. If you have them, call Fancy Schmancy Balloons. The reason is, these are not balloon animals. These are big, like, twisty kind of centerpiece balloons, and they do archways. It's a real decoration thing for your party. And the other thing is, as I mentioned, centerpieces. Not the flowers, which can be arranged by Jeff, who owns Fancy Schmancy Balloons, but you know, these big, nice things that sit on your table or have themes that people have for their bar mitzvahs, for their christenings, for their weddings, for anything, for your graduation. Fancy Schmancy Balloons, 516-797-3229 is the number. And one more sponsor to thank, MortgagesRock.com. This is the place not just to get a mortgage or a loan that you might need. This is the place that will tell you how you can help your friends and neighbors and family and coworkers get loans while you get commission. MortgagesRock.com teaches you how to be a mortgage broker. I want to say hi to Andy Leibowitz. We had another business gathering this week with all the folks in the South Shore trading business cards and having a nice dinner at a restaurant in Long Island. Really nice to see him. And Andy runs MortgagesRock.com. It's not just a website. It's a real person with a real office right there in Hewlett, Long Island. So check him out, MortgagesRock.com. Okay, I'm going to cough now because we have guests tonight on this program, on Dave's Gone By. And it's going to be very, very schizophrenic on this Mother's Day, because I wanted to do the yin and yang of motherhood, as it were. So later on in the program, at about 11:30 or so, we're hoping to have Cindy Sheehan on. She's an author. She wrote a book called Peace Mom. And if that name is recognizable to you, she is probably the most recognized anti-Iraq war protester in America. She's the mom who had her boy over there in Iraq. He was killed. And then she wanted answers. She wanted to know from the president and those people, why were there? Why was her, you know, yes, kids get killed in war, but what was her kid killed for? And she wanted to ask George Bush that question. She felt she was entitled. And her attempts to actually get to George Bush, well, A, they made her famous. B, they led her to be incredibly praised and also vilified in certain circles. It got her arrested at one point for wearing a T-shirt. We'll talk about that. But anyway, Cindy Sheehan, in the second half hour of Dave's Gone By tonight. So that'll be a kind of a heavier, more serious thing than we usually do. But let's get fun. Let's have a little fun in this first half hour because we have another author with us on the program. She has written two books. One is called The Ivy Chronicles, which has to do with the insane things that parents do to fast-track their kids towards Ivy League colleges. I mean, we're talking in kindergarten, the strings they try and pull, the shenanigans that they go through or have to go through in order for their kids to only go into the right schools with the right people and wear the right clothing and all that. And now, Karen Quinn, who wrote that book, has a brand new one out called Wife in the Fast Lane. And these are fiction books, by the way, but they're sort of based on some of her real-life experiences. So she, in this book, which is really a very zippy and fun read, I'm got 50 pages left, I'm just turning pages left and right on it, has to do with this woman who zooms into this incredibly famous high-profile career. Everything goes right, she starts this company, she gets the right money at the right time, everything's fantastic, and then her maid dies, and she winds up taking care of the maid's kid, and a whole bunch of other things go crazy and wrong and weird in her life. It's called Wife in the Fast Lane, and it's written by Karen Quinn, and Karen Quinn is on the phone with us as we speak. Karen, you there? Karen, hello?
Hello?
Ah, Mitt Mazel Miklik. There we are. I love the new phone system at WGBV. And this is Dave Lefkowitz. You're on the air. Hello. Welcome to the Daverhood.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Oh, so sorry about that. Anyway, yes. Did you hear any of the long, long intro? Were you just hanging
out? I did. It was so nice. Thank you.
Well, you're very, very welcome.
Yeah.
So, okay, how did your career start as a writer? Because you took a couple of twists and turns to get into the writing game.
I did. I had started a company called Smart City Kids, where I was helping families in Manhattan get their children into the very best nursery schools and kindergartens. And I did that for several years until I could do it no more. I just didn't have the stomach for it anymore. And I thought, well, you know, maybe I'll try to write a book about all the funny things that happened to me when I had this business. And that was my inspiration for writing The Ivy Chronicles. And it's, even though it's a novel, it's full of all kinds of things that really did happen that are quite pretty crazy.
For example?
Well, I'll give you just one example. I mean, one of the things I used to do when I had the business is I was always tutoring children, little like 4-year-olds, to get them ready for their kindergarten admissions test. And I remember once I was tutoring this little boy and I was teaching him colors, and in the middle of my riveting lecture, he fell asleep. And I told his mother, you better take this child home. And the mother said, oh, no, keep talking. He'll get it subliminally. And the terrible thing was, I did. I taught this sleeping child colors. I mean, this is just one example.
Well, maybe that's not so crazy. I mean, there is a, you are talking to the subconscious, and maybe it burrows deeply, becomes another Surratt or something.
Maybe. In fact, I actually thought, well, maybe that would be another addition to my business. I could make these tapes that they could play for little 4-year-olds while they were sleeping. I thought about it, but then I thought, no, I think that's going a little too far.
I think it's time for fetus Einstein tapes. That's what we need.
That's what we need.
Embryo Einstein.
I think that exists, actually.
Oh please. Oh, good God.
No, I think parents get pretty, you know, they're getting pretty intense about wanting to be sure that their kids know what they're supposed to know by the time they get into kindergarten. And, I mean, I used to prep these kids, you know, really hardcore. And I remember working with this one little girl once, and I was just, you know, asking her all these questions, you know, like, what color is the sky? What color is the grass? And we were really, you know, cramming for her test. And she said to me, stop! Can't you see I'm only 4?
Oh, good God.
And that made me decide at that point. That was really when I decided to get out of the business. I said, you know what? This is not good. I think I'm pushing these kids too far, and I don't want to be part of it anymore. So
yeah,
it's a kind of a crazy, crazy world we live in.
And then, well, actually, this was before or after you were a lawyer.
I started as a lawyer, and I was 15 years in marketing and advertising at American Express. And I was downsized from American Express, and that's when I started Smart City Kids. And then after several years with Smart City Kids, that was when I thought I would try to write the book. And I had no experience writing. I had, except for my holiday letter. I wrote a good holiday letter. But other than that, I had not ever written anything before. And I thought, you know, I've always wanted to write a book, and why don't I try? You know, maybe I can do it. And so, you know, I sat down and I just, you know, wrote, and in 3 months I had the first draft of this book.
Wow.
It really poured out of me. Because I had so many funny stories to tell, and you know, just it was just such a crazy experience.
And also, somewhere in there, I read in your bio, it wasn't just your deciding. I mean, you had a little telepathic help, in a manner of speaking.
Oh, yeah, I did.
I mean, I don't believe in this stuff, but it
you know?
Sure makes an interesting story, so go for it.
Well, I've been going to a psychic for years. And the psychic had been telling me, she said, you know, when you get to be like in your, you know, mid-40s, she say, something huge is going to happen. Huge. It's going to change your life. And I would go to her each year, and she would forget that she had told me that the year before. And she'd say, have I told you about this huge thing that's going to happen? And I kept saying, well, yeah, you told me about it, but what is it? Do you have any ideas about it? And she said, she kept saying no, she didn't know what it was going to be. Well, every year she told me about it, and I couldn't figure out what it was going to be. But when I sat down and I started writing the book, there was a moment where I read the book, and I remember thinking to myself, you know, this is a very funny book. This is good, and people are going to want to read it. And I realized at that moment that this was the big thing that she'd been talking about for years and years. And so I went back to see her, and when I walked in the room, she looked at me and she said, have I told you about this big thing that's going to happen to you? And I said, yes. And she said, have you been writing? And I said, yes. And she said, that's it. That's the big thing. I said, I know. I figured it out.
And that first book was pretty big. I mean, it sold how many?
Oh, we sold over 300,000 copies, and it's been optioned to be made into a movie and with Catherine Zeta-Jones. And, yeah, so it did really, really well.
So and that is life-changing.
It was life-changing. It really was. And it was definitely a career that, you know, now I've written Wife in the Fast Lane, and I'm working on another one, and I love doing the writing. I mean, I just love it.
What is your, I do a bunch of different things, and I always wish I had more time for the creative side of my writing. I mean, that's kind of an excuse, but at the same time, I do, what is your routine? What is your regime of how do you do it every day or several times a week where you really block out the time and make it happen?
What I do is I get my kids off to school. So I'm a wife in the fast lane myself. And so I get them off to school, and then I just go sit at my desk, and I can work if I really get on a roll, I can work for 8 hours. I mean, I'll stop for lunch, but then I'll get back to it and I'll really work on it. So I try to work for extended periods of time all day. And what happens is sometimes you get sidetracked because you have to go market a book or, you know, do some other things. But I really try to focus on the writing as much as I can, and I just sit at my desk and I work on it. And the thing is, I do throw some of the material away. I mean, you can't be writing. You're not writing great stuff all the time. But I'm always trying, even when, you know, it doesn't seem to be coming. And in other days, it just flows very well.
And how do you balance then that with, I mean, you have a husband and kids and stuff like that? Or?
Right. I do. I have a husband. I have two kids. And a busy life, like so many women I know. I mean, everybody I know is balancing almost more than any of us can humanly do, but we do it anyway. You know, and I think that the way you do it is you just do the best you can with everything, and you realize that things are going to fall through the cracks, and that's okay. And I just laugh at myself when I make these, when things fall through the cracks, which they do all the time. It was funny. I was applying my daughter to get her into a new high school this year. And, you know, I'm supposed to be such an expert at it because I had my business. And I remember one day we rushed to get to this interview, and I was calling them, and I was saying, we're on our way, we're going to be there. And when we walked in, they said to me, you know, your interview's tomorrow. And I was like, oh, you're kidding.
Why couldn't they have told you that while you were on the phone with them?
They should have. I don't know. That's what I said. That's what but I had to be really nice. I didn't want to be rude about it, but that's what I was thinking. Like, you know, you should have told me that, well, you know, like 30 minutes ago when I called the first time. But I don't think the secretary who answered the phone knew that, you know, I think she found out later. But it was just one of those things, and instead of getting upset with myself, which I might have otherwise done, I just laughed at myself and said, well, isn't that cute?
And that goes into the next book, or...
Right.
Well, because even though you wrote the Ivy Chronicles, there's a bit of that whole private school madness that goes into your new book, Wife in the Fast Lane, because once this really successful corporate woman adopts the maid's kid, mm-hmm. you know, she has to bring that kid into the best school and what she encounters there. Now the villain of the piece, there's
yes,
a couple.
Brownie,
but this woman that she, yeah. Is that based on anybody?
Yeah, she's actually based on, I had a real person in mind. I call...
What's her name? Say the name.
But, you know, every school has one, like a PTA Nazi. You know, the person who just, like, is her whole life is the PTA. And everyone else, you know, we all try to volunteer when we can, but there's always somebody who that is their life, you know, and they're giving everything to it. And, boy, you better listen to this woman or you're going to be in so much trouble. And so that's who she was based on, was a few PTA Nazis I have met in my time.
Wow. What was, like, the most ugly experience that you encountered with someone like that for real? You don't have to use the name, although I would like you to. Well, because why not? Why not call them out?
Well, yeah, I know. I don't want to get sued.
If it's the truth, who can sue?
No, that's true. You're right. No, I remember, actually, you know, I don't know if you got to this part in the book, but it was true. It was a true story, and it was, I remember being part of a committee, or I volunteered to be part of a committee in an earlier school situation that we were in to help with a bulletin board. And when I got there, you know, there were like 8 women, and we were making one bulletin board, and we were going to have like, you know, 8 meetings to talk about the bulletin board. And we were hiring professionals to help. They wanted to hire professionals to help, you know, actually make the things that we were going to put up.
In the book, I remember you had like 8 conferences, 8 meetings about this bulletin board.
Yeah, that was based on a true story. And I remember, as myself, I was working at the time, and I was doing this as just a volunteer thing, and I'm thinking, are you kidding me? You can't be serious. You know, don't these women have more to do? And the thing was, I think all of them did have more to do, but there was one or two women in the group where, you know, this was really important to them, and everyone was afraid to stand up to them. Because, you know, you might get on the outs, or, you might not get on any good committees the next year. So we all tried to you know, appease these women.
Wow.
So they do exist, yeah.
I guess so.
Yeah, and I, you know, because I talked to a number of women when I was writing Wife in the Fast Lane. I interviewed a number of women because I wanted good stories from women in this, living this lifestyle. And they did. They gave me some wonderful stories. But everyone talked about a woman like this in their PTA, no matter what school they went to.
Now, you live in Manhattan, mm-hmm. which is kind of cool, but I guess you're making, at the same time, the conscious choice to send your kids to private school as opposed to public school. I mean, is it just the public schools where you live so bad, or what?
Well, the public schools in New York are actually, they're not great. If I was going to talk about all of them in general, they're not great. There are some really good schools in the city that you can send your kids to. And I did send my daughter for several years to a public school in the city. But when she got older, we had to move her to a private school. So, you know, there are good public schools, and if you know what they are and you can take advantage of them, then that's fantastic. And I know a lot of people who do. But there's a lot of schools that aren't so good, and that's really why a lot of people, you know, choose to send their kids to private schools. But when I had my business, we helped people get their kids into public school, private school, whatever it was they were looking for.
You helped people get their kids into public school?
Yeah.
What, were they retarded?
Yeah. You know what? I have to tell you something. Getting kids into public school in Manhattan is so complicated. You know, when I originally was looking as a parent, the reason I looked at private schools at that time only was because I could figure out the private schools, but the public schools were too complicated for me.
Has to go to school. I mean, it's the
you
law.
You need a PhD to figure out how to get your kid into a good public school in Manhattan. Because, yes, you've got your zone school.
Yeah.
And that one you can just, you know, show up at. But, you know, there's all these other schools that you have access to that you can test into or you can get a variance to get into.
So what it means is that the public schools that are left are the ones that all the rejects end up going to, and that's why they're crappy schools and the cycle continues.
Yeah, I'd say that's true. Yeah. It's tough, but the good ones, I mean, and in fact, I think in the Ivy Chronicles I wrote about this, the really good public schools, you know, 24 hours before, people will be lined up on the day that you can enroll for the next year. They'll be lined up in the streets, you know, and camping out to get a place in a good school. That doesn't happen where you are at all.
It's school stock. Well, no, I mean, I live on Long Island,
yeah,
so it's a little different. So the public schools, at least in our area, are good. You go to the one in the zone because you're paying unbelievable, ridiculous taxes to
have
a decent school in your zone.
Uh-huh.
And then we have so many, so many Jewish people in the enclave where we're at that they end up going to a private school anyway because they want the Jewish education. So it's all sort of. Sort of a weird thing here. We're talking, by the way, with Karen Quinn, author of The Ivy Chronicles and Wife in the Fast Lane. Have just a couple of minutes left, but I do want to ask, you've been on a book tour.
Right.
Recently, and I wonder what that's like, and have you had any fun or weird experiences going all across the country and selling your book?
Oh, well, you know, book tours are very interesting. I think that they're a lot of fun, and I enjoy them. I enjoy meeting people. And the thing about a book tour for most authors, I think, is that you go into certain markets and you'll have 100 people waiting for you, and then you'll go into another market and there'll be 2 people waiting for you. And so it's kind of weird when that happens. And I remember there was one market that I went into. It was a cold, snowy night. But there were 2 people there, one being my mother's best friend who lived in that city, and the other being another author who wanted me to give her a blurb for her book. So that was embarrassing.
Yeah.
But that's what happens. I mean, and yet other markets, you know, you're you know, there and it's wonderful and you're, you know, tons of people there. So that's usually what it is. It's feast or famine with book tours.
And have you done television regionally? You know, to
well, I have done a lot of television since I've become a writer, you know, since I started writing. You know, I did The View, which was very exciting.
Yeah.
And I've, you know, done some local news shows and that kind of thing. And it's fun. I really enjoy it. I never thought I would be doing any of this.
And you are a full-time writer now.
Now I am, yes.
That's wicked cool. So can I ask what's on the burner?
Well, I'm working on another book right now. In fact, I'm trying to get it finished at the end of May. And it's another what I would consider, you know, romantic comedy with an emphasis on comedy. I really like to write books that make people laugh. And so that's sort of the focus.
Cool.
Romantic but funny.
And please tell people how they can get the romantic and funny and really zany. I haven't read the Ivy Chronicles, but I am almost finished with Wife in the Fast Lane. How can people get both of these books?
Well, you can go to certainly to Barnes & Noble or Amazon.com or any bookstore and get it online, or just call your local bookstore or your library, and the books are there as well. So they're sort of available everywhere.
But, of course, this is a moment where you can push your website.
Oh, yeah, I do.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't think of those things. I do have a great website. It's a lot of fun. KarenQuinn.net or theivychronicles.com. Either one will get you there. Or wifeandfastlane.com will get you there. There's a lot of fun things there, including some of the hysterical one-liners that mothers around the country have sent me. They've been inspired by Wife in the Fast Lane, and they've sent some great one-liners.
Such as,
I knew I was living in the fast lane when my husband asked me what my favorite sexual fantasy was, and I told him you making love to me without waking me up. I thought that was good.
I think my wife would appreciate that. Well, I don't
know. Oh, no, she wouldn't.
Let's have one more.
Okay, and you always do something in the fast lane when my microwave went out and my children cried because they did not know how they were going to eat.
Oh. But
that's my house. That would be my house.
Well, hopefully, you know, with the sales of these books and the movie coming out, and I guess, what does that movie do of Ivy Chronicles?
Well, I'm guessing it'll be at least another year and a half away. They take a long time to write, to make these movies. They're working on it now, though, so I'm excited about it.
Well, by then you could probably have all the microwaves you want. And certainly, hopefully, all the success that you want for you and your family. A most happy Mother's Day to you.
Oh, thank you so much.
Karen Quinn, thank you very, very much for being in the neighborhood. Have a great one.
You too. Bye-bye. Feel better.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
That was Karen Quinn, ladies and gentlemen, the author of Wife in the Fast Lane and the Ivy Chronicles. Fun. Well, I can vouch certainly that one of the books is a lot of fun to read and a real quick and enjoyable and entertaining look at a certain level of society and motherhood. So what we're going to do is switch gears here in just a moment or two. We're going to play a couple of commercials and also in between while we're trying to get Cindy Sheehan on the phone. Now, Cindy Sheehan is our other guest tonight. She's also a recent author of a book called Peace Mom, about her experiences, which were a lot, I mean, as you know, unpleasant and annoying as some of Karen's experiences were dealing with moms and schools and ridiculousness of all that, Cindy Sheehan had a very different story to tell. She lost her son in our current war, and she wanted answers. She wanted to know why. And she wanted to go to the man at the top, the man we all voted for, the man who works for us, and ask him. And, well, trying to do that is obviously not the easiest thing in the world. So what we're going to do is we're going to get to Cindy Sheehan in a few minutes. In between that, though, on behalf of my beloved and lovely and wonderful wife, Joyce, and this week my nursemaid to some extent, she requested that I play at least part of a medley that I did up about 2 or 3 years ago on this program of mother songs, or I call it the Mama Medley, where bits and pieces of all these different pop and folk and blues and rock songs that have to do with mommies. See if you can guess some of the titles and some of the artists that we'll be playing. So we'll be back in a few minutes. Do not go away, because we're taking the mothership to the neighborhood. Hewlett, Hewlett, Minuteman, Minuteman, press, is the place, to make, flyers, posters, bound reports, and, of course, copies, 10% off for Dave's Gone By, listeners, at Hewlett, Hewlett. Minuteman.
From the Bible to the popular song, there's one theme that we find right along. Of all ideals they hail as good, the most sublime is motherhood.
Motherly love. Motherly love. Forget about the brotherly and otherly love. Motherly love is just a thing for you. You know your mother's gonna love you till you don't know what to do.
Mamma mia, here I go again. My, how can I resist you? Mamma mia, does it show again?
always sees me through. When you're good to Mama, Mama's good to you.
Like to hear about how I met your mother.
Mother looks best in the playground, and I watch them when they leave them alone. And if they don't want to stay, she can make them all play. She knows just when to take them all home. I got a crush on a mother. Maybe we should entangle our lives. My son and my daughter were born for each other, and she's reminding me of all of my wives. Being an only other mother, just praying that the sun's gonna shine. And if the wine on the weirdo is here,
the glory. a million miles by one of your smiles, my mammy. Mammy, my little mammy. The sun shines east, the sun shines west. I know where the sun shines best. It's on my mammy I'm talking about. Nobody else's. My little mammy.
Kind to mother now and then, have a chat, buy her candy or some flowers or a brand new hat, but maybe you had better let it go at that.
Oh, mama, well, I think it's time I'm leaving.
Mammy, mammy, I'm coming. Oh, I hope I didn't make you wait. Mammy, mammy, I'm coming. Oh, Lord, I hope I'm not late. Mammy, mammy, look at me. Don't you know me? I'm your little baby. I walk a million miles for one of your smiles, my mammy.
So, you don't have satellite radio, you don't have an iPod or 100 music channels on your cable. Doesn't matter. Live365.com has dozens of radio stations in all sorts of formats absolutely free. And one station, DFSX Radio, plays vintage episodes of Dave's Gone By every Saturday night at 11 Eastern Time. I've even put their link on davesgoneby.org. So, just click to hear music and talk and me free on DFSX. Inside Broadway, brought to you by Total Theater's Performing Arts Insider, your everything theater guide. Yes, Inside Broadway, brought to you by Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine. It's called the Bible of Broadway, and has been that for over 60 years. Started in 1944, pretty wonderful magazine, if I do say so myself. Full disclosure, I work on the magazine just a little bit, so I kind of help the thing out, and I'm very proud of it, because it tells you everything you need to know about Broadway, off-Broadway, off-off-Broadway, cabaret, opera, and dance, all about the arts on the stages of New York. So what we're going to do, since we've not been able to reach Sidney Sheehan, or she has not been able to reach us, or a combination of the two, if that was her office or her people calling while I was talking to Karen Quinn. Sorry, couldn't pick up the phone. If it wasn't and she just forgot or got busy, well, shame, shame, shame. And maybe that's why George Bush won't meet with ya. Oh, well. Anywho, got so much to talk about anyway that came prepared to talk about all the things that are happening on Broadway. As I said in the opening, aside from the coughing that I did in the opening of the program, then I'll do just a little more of that for you now. I don't think I can do that spontaneous burp for you. That was so heartening and so special at the beginning of the show, but I can do some coughing. So let me get my chest ready, do a couple of breathe ins, breathe outs, and okay, there we go. If I tell you the kind of coughing I was doing late last night is nothing like this. I mean, that was hunched over the bowl, gag reflex, like dry heave kind of coughing. This is just like, oh, nasty little hacking summer cold cough. Big deal. But, anywho, here to talk about the season that just ended on Broadway a day or two ago. Now, it seemed just a little less busy than most Broadway seasons tend to be. And the irony of that is the success of shows. What happens is there's only a limited number of theaters, physical theater buildings, that are considered Broadway theaters. What is the definition of a Broadway theater? It has to do with A, location, has to be, well, in Manhattan. And nearly all the Broadway theaters are congregated somewhere between 41st Street and 53rd Street, with one exception, and that's Lincoln Center up at 65th. Everything else, all the other Broadway theaters, are clustered between 8th and 6th Avenue in about a 12-block radius. Oh, I'm going to do a little nose-blowing, too. This is like a symphony of me tonight. Hold on. Oh, good one. Anyway, so there's a limited number of theaters, and what happens is in a busy season, that actually means there's a lot of turnover. Things come in for a short time, either because they're limited runs, or because they're not as popular as the producers had hoped, and the thing that they thought would run for years ends up running a month and a half. Well, this year, especially, so many things ended up sticking around and staying, even from last season, and even things that are like soft hits. Now you got big hits, huge things that just like the producers that open, and there are lines around the block, and everybody wants to see it. Or you get shows that may not be the hugest in popularity, but when they open, they know they're only scheduled to be there for a couple of months because the actors have a limited time frame. They have to go back to Hollywood or whatever it is. And so the ticket demand is very high because you only have a very short period to see the play, like Julia Roberts 2 years ago. You know, the play was only scheduled to run a few weeks, so everybody wanted to see Julia Roberts, just ran to see it, even though the reviews weren't great, and she wasn't great. Well, what happens is, if you have shows that stick around, not for 50 performances or 150 performances, but for 300, 400, 600 performances, which is, you know, a little under 2 years, the theater stays booked. It stays full. And all these things that want to come into Broadway just don't have the chance. They have to wait until something opens up, all the while still holding on to the actors and the tech people and the director and the folks that they want to be in the show in the first place. And it makes for some odd things happening. Like there was a show that they were all prepared to do towards the very end of this season called Xanadu, which, yes, I swear to God, Xanadu, they've made a musical based on that old, weird movie musical with the one and only Olivia Newton-John and Gene Kelly, because they belong together, they just do. And it was obviously a badly reviewed, very campy film that has its real supporters. It's a cult film. And so they've decided to really play up the camp and spoof and fun elements and turn that into a musical. And they got the guy, Douglas Carter Beam, who wrote some really funny plays. He wrote As Bees and Honey Drown. He also had Little Dog Laughed on Broadway earlier this season. So with him behind it, you get the feeling, okay, this might work and might be a good idea in a goofy, zany, ridiculous way. So they wanted to bring it in, and I believe they had Jane Krakowski lined up. You may know her as the actress who was in Ally McBeal. She was the bitchy secretary. She wasn't the Ally, and she wasn't the Courtney Thorne Smith character. She was that other man-hungry secretary person. So anyway, she's also most known as a theater person. She was in, what was the revival of Nine, and I think she may have snagged a Tony for that. But you know what? Something happened. She was in a couple of the readings. She was in some workshops, and they were all ready to go ahead with her. And then I think the story is that TV came calling, and she got a pilot. And well, as glorious as Broadway is, and as nice as a paycheck as you can make, obviously if you can get a TV show and the TV show clicks, that's money in a whole different stratosphere. So suddenly Xanadu lost its lead actress. What do you do? Well, what you do is you get another lead actress, and they got, I believe, Carrie Butler, who was in the revival of Little Shop of Horrors, and she was in Hairspray. Very talented, very cute actress. So great, but they can't really, you know, suddenly they have this whole big switch in the cast, and the whole production nearly fell apart. And then they said, well, what do we do? Well, okay, we got to kind of hold it together, and then maybe we'll bring it in 6 months or a year from now. But then they lose the theater that they were expecting to go into. So immediately they cobbled together, they got a new cast together, and said, no, we're going to do it, we're going to open it, and we're going to get it done sooner than later. So they're not going to fit into the past season of Broadway that just ended. They're going to go into the 2007-2008 season, and they're actually going to be the first show opening in the season. It's a $5 million musical, apparently, which is not terribly big for Broadway at all. And so opens at the Helen Hayes Theater June 26th, and it starts previews just about 2 weeks from now. So wishing them well. Christopher Ashley is directing. And so that's just a little bit of a story of why, at the end of a Broadway season, it seemed like there's this big flurry of activity the last couple of weeks, because all the producers are opening their shows before the Tony deadline. And you figure, oh my gosh, everything's opening and there's no time to see everything. But then you look back on it, and there were only 33 new productions in the 2006-2007 Broadway season. And that isn't a whole heck of a lot. And that, again, has to do with the real estate, with not many places to open things up. Now, as far as things that did open up towards the end of the year, I'm not going to do full reviews at this particular point, because this is kind of off the cuff and wasn't really expecting to do Inside Broadway segment tonight, but always happy to talk about the theater, especially since, as I mentioned early in the show, that I'll be hosting the third annual WGBB Tony Awards special in, let's see, when is it? That's June 4th, Monday night, 7 to 10 p.m., 3 hours of Broadway. Going to be talking to critics, actors, directors, probably, and also playing a lot of music and having fun. So don't miss it. June 4th, Monday. Mark it on your calendar. Don't even mark it on your calendars. What you got to do is you tattoo it on the back of your neck. And then all through the summer, since you're not going to wear these shirts with high collars, you have people tap you on the shoulder and they say, hey, do you realize that you have tattooed on the back of your neck WGBB Tony Special, June 4th, 7 p.m.? Because there's not enough room on the neck to do the dash 10 p.m. So you just have 7 p.m. as a reminder. And then in very, very small ink, you also have our website, am1240wgbb.com. Because it's a good tattoo artist, and you trust him, and he isn't that painful. So people tap you wherever you go. When they're in a store, they look at your neck and they're going, well, that's a kind of an interesting tattoo. Do it. Tattoo your neck for June 4th. The WGBB Tony Special. So some of the shows that we will be discussing on that special and celebrating and perhaps even criticizing a bit opened pretty late in the season. Now, the last show to open this season was a revival of 110 in the Shade by Harvey Schmidt and Tom Jones. Now, those are the folks best known for giving us The Fantastics, which was also revived this season and is still running off-Broadway. That's a cute little revival. You really, really have to be in the mood for that show. And when you are, if you're in a very nostalgic, sort of quiet mood for the old day, I mean, the original show opened, I think, in 1963, and they didn't know it was going to run a year, let alone 40 years. And then it closed for a while, and they said, you know what, we got to bring it back. It's The Fantastics. So they brought it back to another theater. It's now in Midtown. And it's still a very sweet little show. And one of the really cool things, I think he's still appearing in it, is a fellow in the cast, I think his name is Tom Bruce. He plays one of the peripheral characters. Well, Tom Bruce is actually a pseudonym for Tom Jones, who co-wrote the show, who's this plucky, spry fellow, got to be in his 70s now, if not early 80s. And he's still up there doing it, and doing it for, really, the show that made them world famous, and probably one of the most famous musicals ever to happen, and it's never played on Broadway. But anyway, one show that Jones and Schmidt did do on Broadway was 110 in the Shade, and if that name title isn't terribly familiar to you, or if you think you know what it is, you've heard of it, but you don't know what it is, it's their version, musicalized, of The Rainmaker. You know, that old story, the N. Richard Nash play of this town, small, small little town, and there's no rain, and there's a drought, and this very nice, kind of rough but rustic family with the father and two brothers and the daughter who's going to be an old maid. She's kind of plain, and she just doesn't know how to meet men or deal with men or flirt with them or anything, so she resigns herself to a life just on the old homestead. But she does get a little romance in her life, because this guy comes in, the Rainmaker arrives, and he arrives with a drum, and he arrives with all this magic stuff, and he says, that's what I do, pay me $100, and I will give you the biggest wonderful rainstorm, and your crops will be saved, and everything will be great, and this being a musical, everybody believes him, and they say, what the heck, we'll give him the money, what we got to lose? And so they do, and so there's some love interest there, and meanwhile the father and the brothers are trying to wake up the town sheriff, who's, well, we think he's a widower, turns out he's not, he's just divorced, but anyway, he's got his problems with women and approaching, and he kind of is set in his ways, and will he realize that Lizzie is quite a catch before it's too late, before he loses her to this new stranger in town? It's a sweet old story, and I gotta tell you, the score is not the greatest thing ever written. There's something a little too simplified for me of the Tom Jones, Harvey Schmidt score. And yet, the musical works. It is really quite sweet. It's powerful. A lot of that has to do with its lead actress in this particular production, Audra McDonald. So she's really the selling card of it, even if it weren't a good musical, which it happens to be. But Audra McDonald hasn't been on Broadway in about 8 years. And back then, it was great to see her. She was in Master Class, and she was in that revival of Carousel. So, you know, when we were seeing her, it wasn't exactly under the best or most interesting circumstances, because she was also doing stuff like Marie Christine and like these musicals that nobody wanted to hear once, let alone again. So she's been sort of persona non grata for a while. And here she is. She shows up, and they cast her as Lizzie in 110 in the Shade. And let me tell you, she is absolutely marvelous. The minute she opens her mouth, you know that this woman can sing. And it seems so effortless to her, the way she doesn't have to belt it. It's just there. And then when she has to really start to act and start to, because she's mostly bottled up early on. She's used to her life. She knows it's not going to get much better. And then when all this hope starts happening to her, it becomes so touching, and she is so strong and emotional and vibrant and so there that she had the audience. I mean, people were talking for almost the entire season. All the talk was, well, you know, the best actress Tony is going to go to Christine Ebersole in Grey Gardens, because that's such an amazing performance, because she's so great. She has two roles, one in the first act and one in the second, and the second act she's playing this real-life woman who's this shut-in, and she is so like her. It's amazing, and it's like, don't even bother holding a Tony Award contest this year for Best Actress in a Musical. It's going to Christine Ebersole. And I walked out of 110 in the Shade 3 days ago, and suddenly it's like, whoa, okay, Audra might take it. This Tony might just go to Audra McDonald. And who knew? Who thought? Last show of the season. Last moments of the season. And there she is. And let me tell you, I would not be upset if either of them took the Tony Award this year. Well, I wanted to talk about a bunch of the other shows that opened. I'll do a very quick rundown, because we've got to get out of here. It's midnight already on AM 1240 WGBB Freeport. And Gospel is going to be starting up in a couple of minutes. But I do want to also kind of give a quick recommendation to Radio Gulf, which is the last August Wilson play. I'm calling him August like I knew him. I mean, I met him a couple of times, and he was certainly an interesting fellow to talk to. But the late Mr. Wilson, he finished, this is the most miraculous thing, he finished that 10-play cycle that he was writing about African-American life in America over the 100-year span. So he would write a play for every decade, most of them set in the Pittsburgh Hill District. And this one, he saved not the best for last, but he saved the most modern for last, one that's set in the 1990s, and has to do with this up-and-coming black politician who, the key to his success is whether he can get an area of Pittsburgh, the black area, declared a blight zone, and then they can knock everything down and build up this new amazing construction with a Starbucks and with residential areas, and everything's going really great, except for the fact that there's this one guy who will not sell his house. He will not give up the little house that he's been living in that sits right smack in the center of where this new shopping center should be. And then there calls in the question of all these things of eminent domain, and the politician feels that he has the right to take the house because he bought it before auction a few years back, and it gets into all that stuff, and then it really also gets into, as August Wilson does, just what it means to be moral and what justice is and what it means to be black in America and what it means to deal with your fellow people in that capacity. It's one of the nice things, as I said, it's not the best Wilson play, but because it's modern, it really moves, perhaps, and it goes a little faster than some of his other works do. And if it's not the piano lesson, it's pretty darn good. It's Radio Golf, and it's playing at the Court Theater. I can't really recommend the new play Deuce by Terrence McNally, even though it is so wonderful to see Angela Lansbury and Marion Seldes up on stage just acting together, doing their thing. But the play is just not there. Could have given them something. They could play Mary Stuart, something else. And can't recommend Love Music either. That's a new musical using old Kurt Weill songs that Harold Prince is directing at the Biltmore Theater for Manhattan Theater Club. You know, some critics really love it a lot. I say that the thing just has no momentum. It's telling the love story between Kurt Weill and Lottie Lenya, which should be this really spark-filled and interesting thing, and it has to do with Broadway and Weimar Germany and everything. It just is so bleh. And you just sit there, and some of the songs are really cool because you've got Donna Murphy in it and Michael Cerveris, and sometimes they're pretty exciting to watch, but they're also playing these characters and singing in their voices, so you don't get to hear Donna Murphy's beautiful voice, and you don't get to hear really Michael Cerveris nail a song the way he can. And you also get a guy who really very well impersonates Bertolt Brecht, and that's kind of interesting, but it doesn't happen. But anyway, those are some of the things that have been happening just the last week or two on Broadway at the very, very tail end of the season. As I said, for all the information about last season and the upcoming season, get yourself a copy of Performing Arts Insider via performingartsinsider.com. And also, of course, listen to the WGBB Tony Awards special June 4th on this station, 7 to 10 p.m., when we really go very deeply inside Broadway. We've just been inside Broadway, thanks to TotalTheater.com and Performing Arts Insider.
Moby Dick, Ulysses, War and Peace, the Bible. Big freaking deal. If you want to read a real book, a funny book, try Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World, a collection of comedies by Dave Lefkowitz, me, the host of Dave's Gone By. Each play is stage-tested and relatively safe for public consumption. Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World, available from Holvo Books on the Dave's Gone By website. It's the great American something.
There is a season, turn, 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 turn the pages of Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine, because this is the season for Broadway. All the big shows are opening in the next few weeks. Learn about them all. For 64 years, Performing Arts Insider has been the Bible of Broadway. Find out why by going to performingartsinsider.com. Subscriptions are 10% off for Dave's Gone By listeners. So turn, turn, turn to Performing Arts Insider for every show under heaven. Advertise, advertise, come on everybody, come and advertise. Bring your message to my listeners. Dave's Gone By. We have great rates for 30 and 60 second ads. By next week, everybody listening to this show can learn about your restaurant, business, or service. See the rate card at davesgoneby.org. Advertise, advertise. It's a wonderama when you advertise. davesgoneby.org. If you want a sponsor, call or email me.
Hello, this is Joe Franklin, as in Joe Franklin's Memory Lane. You're joining me and listening to Dave's Gone By on WGBB.
Yes, you are indeed listening to Dave's Gone By on WGBB. It's 12:06 in the morning, which means I've got to roll on out of here. Just got to do some business. Want to thank our sponsors, MortgagesRock.com. MortgagesRock.com, where you can get mortgages or learn how to give other people mortgages and get some commission for yourself. Also, Performing Arts Insider. Yes, you know about that one. Hewlett Minuteman Press, the copy kings of Broadway. 516-569-5577 is their phone number, and they offer 10% off every job, any job, 10% off for Dave's Gone By listeners. And finally, a shout-out to Jeff Goodman of Fancy Schmancy Balloons for all your party and catering, all your needs if you're having a party. 516-797. I knew that cough would catch up with me. 516-797-3229. Okay, got to do that Mother's Day shout-outs. Happy Mother's Day, Mom. Great seeing you this afternoon. Took her out to lunch in a nice little restaurant. So, love you, Mom. Love you more than, let's see, oh, I don't know, cookies and glue. Love you more than the nose goblins wiped on my sleeve. That's how much I love my mom. And also, want to give a loving shout-out to my mother-in-law, Rosemary Weil, and hope that she's also get this kind of cold. I don't think she got it from me, because you know, I was very careful when we were necking not to put my tongue in her mouth. So, want to refuah shlema to her, and also Happy Mother's Day. Happy Mother's Day to Aunt Helen as well, not my aunt, but my wife's. Happy to Bonnie Pinkow, my Aunt Bonnie, and my Aunt Esther. And happy Mother's Day to Nihal and to Natalie and to all our friends and to all of you out there. If I'm forgetting some people I should be mentioning, well, you know who you are, so I don't have to say it. So just happy Mother's Day, and that's that. give another shout-out. I'm glad my voice held up until now. David Pace, who was on this program on our 14th episode back in January 5th, 2003, Dave Pace was on one of our very first shows. Well, he turned up for about 10 seconds in that big documentary they have on PBS this past week about the Mormons. Because, you know, he's sort of a semi-frocked, half-excommunicated author Mormon type. And so they interviewed him, and apparently they shot about 2 hours of footage. And as typically these things go, they used about 10 seconds. But I saw him on TV for those 10 seconds, so big shout-out to Dave. He apparently wrote a book that's won some awards, so congrats. I want to get him back on the air pretty soon. Also, want to remind everybody that Richard Skipper, who was here impersonating Carol Channing a few weeks ago, he's doing a special performance at Helen's Supper Club on Tuesday, June 5th. That's the day after our Tony special. June 5th at Helen's Supper Club to see Richard Skipper as Carol Channing. Okay, reminders. You can hear a vintage Dave's Gone By every Thursday night and every Saturday night at 11 on live365.com. That's a radio portal, in other words, or an internet portal, where you go on the website and there's dozens and dozens and dozens of radio stations you can listen to for free. If you want to pay something, then you can listen without advertisements. But it's free to just go to live365.com. Check out their radio stations. The one that we are on is called DFSXRadio.com, and they air vintage episodes of Dave's Gone By Thursdays and Saturday nights at 11. The links to all of these are on my website, davesgoneby.org. And if you kind of like what you heard this evening, if you want to, you know, you're kind of new to the show, remember that you can hear 25 vintage full episodes of this program, of Dave's Gone By, at theaterpod.com, theaterpod.com. They're absolutely free. You just go to the website, you can click, and listen on your computer to 24 plus one episodes of the show, theaterpod.com. In the coming weeks on this program, there's some of our guests are going to be Jay Jacobs. I know we've been putting him off, but he's written a pretty cool biography of Tom Waits. So want to talk to him and play some of Tom Waits' music as soon as we get a chance. Also, Frank Scoblet. There's an interesting story there. This is a fella whom I acted with in a traveling theater troupe on Long Island about 15, 20 years ago or so. And then he was also a teacher in the Long Island School District. Well, he ends up giving all that up and goes into an entirely different career and ends up becoming America's best-selling author about casino gambling. Quite a story, and we're going to have Frank on in about 2 or 3 weeks, so that's going to be really cool. Big thank you also so huge thank you to Karen Quinn, our guest tonight in the neighborhood. Please go out and get her books, The Ivy Chronicles and Wife in the Fast Lane. KarenQuinn.net has the information that you need. She was really a fun guest, and I'm telling you, I'm reading Wife in the Fast Lane. It is a fun read. Check it out. I do not want to give a thank you to Cindy Sheehan. I do not know what happened to her, and I apologize to everybody who tuned in expecting to hear her rag on President Bush and rag on the war and talk about her son and her activism. But now I just don't give a damn. And you know, maybe her son's not dead. Maybe he's just turning up very, very late for mess call. Whatever. I don't care. But I do care that you're here to listen to this program every Sunday night at 11, Dave's Gone By, and we will be back next Sunday, May 20th, 2007, with the 221st episode of Dave's Gone By. Until then, don't miss your days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz wishing you good night, and I wish you a mother's love wherever you go, and gong by. We'll be right back.